Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
This is embarrassing. You should not be listening to this show. What the hell is that about? The hell are you doing?
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
You know you've had too much to drink when you wake up the next morning and your shoes don't fit. That's because they're not your shoes. Even worse if they're high heels and you're a guy. That's really, you did something really awful. When anybody wants to have a cocktail and then they mutter the phrase, well, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, I can't really figure out what the hell they're talking about. Yes, it is 5 o'clock somewhere. What does that have to do with you drinking? Is it a rule in the Constitution that you can't drink until it's 5 o'clock somewhere? My veterinarian said that I really should brush my dog's teeth every once in a while, so yesterday I gave it a shot. That wasn't too successful, especially the flossing part. Dog did not appreciate that. I don't even like flossing. I don't like putting a little string between my teeth and going back and forth like a bandsaw. Kind of makes no sense. If my gums are receding, think of what's happening to my brain. Ouch. Yeah, they say when you get older, your brain cells start dying. And, I don't know. I'm kind of thinking, how many did I have to start with? There's a thing called Prevagen. Apparently, if you think you're suffering from minor memory loss, they found some ingredient in jellyfish that they put in this pill that apparently increases your memory and makes your brain cells strong. And yet, I've seen a lot of jellyfish. I don't really know how intelligent they are. Concept of a jellyfish. I mean, jelly is a squirmy, translucent kind of thing, and there's jellyfish swimming in the ocean, and that's icky. That's yucky. But yet, they're apparently incredibly smart. I saw a jellyfish yesterday. The head of a large oil industry. These jellyfish are taking over the world with their intelligence, apparently. Well, welcome to the program. This is especially a treat for you. Today's show is going to be interesting. You know, they say that laughter is the best medicine. I don't know who they are. I guess some people. But that laughing is the best medicine. And it depends on the disease, I think. It really does. Last time I had a real bad head cold and I could hardly breathe and I had asthma and respiratory problems. Someone told me a joke, and I felt fantastic. I don't know how that works, but apparently laughter is the best medicine. We have an author who has written a book about wit. As a matter of fact, the name of the book is Wit's End, going to join us later on in the program and talk about funny stuff, funny, clever stuff that makes you laugh and happy and stuff. But he kind of looks at humor, which is interesting, and it's written in a very interesting manner as well. I know you look forward to that. I know you will. I realize that. Who's Jared Kushner? What the hell is this guy doing on this planet? Jared Kushner is married to Trump's daughter, Ivanka. And the man, I believe, is 37, 38 years old, but looks like he's 17. Well, good for you, Jared. I think that's the only quality that you have. Jared's family, the Kushners, are worth well over $1 billion. Another rich family. Those of you that voted for Trump because he was middle America, I think you got that one wrong. He ain't middle America. The people that he associates with are not middle America. The people that he worships are not middle America. And there aren't many people he worships beyond himself. I don't know what you do with this middle America crap. I mean, wow, what a con man, medicine man this guy was. He actually, this billionaire, with all his billionaire friends, with all this power and money to buy things off and buy off people and all this money stuff, and you voted for him for president because you represented middle America? What are you, cooked? Well, you learn your lesson in the hard way, don't you? It's kind of funny to me, and I'm laughing. Jared Kushner, man, he looks like a child. He looks like his pimples are about to pop, and maybe he'll graduate from junior high and go to high school next year. What's his background? Money. Money. He took over his father's conglomerate, the Kushner Company, when his father was indicted and sent to federal prison for 2 years. Kushner's father went to federal penitentiary for 2 years for money laundering, tax evasion, that kind of thing, that kind of Trumpian kind of middle America kind of thing. So, you know, Kushner came from a very straight-laced, responsible family. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. So, so then Trump becomes president. I still can't believe I just said that. And what does he do? He takes this Jared Kushner guy and he makes him his senior advisor. What background does he have in government? There couldn't be a bigger zero on the page. Comes from a family of tax evasion, money laundering, convicted accordingly. And yet he chooses this guy to be his senior advisor. What does he do with this Kushner guy? He sends him to all the big countries that have a lot of money. Saudi Arabia, yeah. China. Kushner thinks that he's going to solve the opioid crisis. That worked. Yeah, that worked. No more opioid crisis now. Thanks, Jared. Thanks a lot for that one. Jared's going to solve the Mideast crisis there by finding peace between the Arab nations and the Palestinians and the Jews and Israel. Yeah, that worked too, Jared. Your knowledge of this stuff is quite phenomenal, Jared. And you're also the presidential advisor. The guy doesn't listen to a word you say, Jared. Not that you'd say anything that would have any kind of meaning, because you don't know anything. You know zero about any of this. Kushner did start relations when he was with his Kushner company with foreign governments that had a lot of money. I'm just floored. Every day I am a floored man. Jared Kushner is actually the focus of an investigation, but they haven't called him in to that extent just yet. So is everybody in Trump's orbit. Donald, if you're listening to the show, and I know you don't because you're so busy playing golf. Don, here's the deal. I think you are above the law. I think that our Constitution and our articles of government kind of make you above the law. So, are you going to be impeached, Donald? I don't give a crap. Bill Clinton was impeached, and he was still president. That's not going to get rid of you. The only thing that's going to get rid of you, Don, is to be indicted for crimes. And you will be. The question is it going to be now, or is it going to be the day that you're no longer president? Donald, I wouldn't worry about Russian collusion. I wouldn't worry about the Mueller report, no matter what the results of them are. As long as you're president, you're going to be shielded from those problems. But Don, it's that Southern District of New York that is looking at your past finances, your money laundering, your obstruction of justice by threatening witnesses, paying people off, juggling your accounts, campaign finance breaches. Everybody you're connected with seems to be indicted for horrible things. Don, never be the head of human resources. You suck at it. You hire all the wrong people. And most of them that you hire are either indicted or they turn against you because they find out what a blithering idiot you are. Don, the minute you're not president, put your hands behind your back because they're going to be slipping handcuffs on you without question. I'd be more worried about the Southern District of New York finding that you did illegal, horrible things in your business, in your life, in your financial dealings, etc., etc., etc. You will be, man, I'm glad your face is orange because it's going to match your jumpsuit, Don. I'd be more worried about that than it would about anything Mueller could put out on you. I really do. The day you ain't president anymore, Don, and I think that day is coming really quick, you're not going to be walking the streets, taking a walk in the park, baby. That ain't going to happen. You'll be under a microscope for the rest of your life, and they'll find out what your life was all about and what you've done during it. And that power that you thought you had, maybe you shouldn't have become president. Maybe you should have kept your mouth shut, which is impossible for you to do, and continued your life of money power. When you became president, man, you put it all out on the table for everybody to see. All the lies, all the deceit. And of course, your followers will still be with you. I guarantee they're going to need a large jail cell for you and all of your avid followers and flowerers who will not leave your side no matter what you do. Why, Don, you could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue in New York in broad daylight and those people would still be your supporters. Well, you're going to need a large cell. Okay. That's enough. I'm sorry. I do this every once in a while. It just gets to me. I don't know. I really don't know. It's just sad. It's like holding up a puppy dog.
Aww.
I know. Another form of manipulation. When I'm watching TV, manipulation is a hard word to say, isn't it? Try it. You try it yourself. Go on. Manipulation. Oh, you did it. Okay. Those puppy dog commercials, man, they drive me nuts. I have a gigantic heart, not because of a physical condition, but because I love. It's so obvious that I love. I have a very large heart, and when I'm watching a show, and then all of a sudden they go to a commercial, and there's this puppy dog that looks emaciated. It's been out in the cold for 17 years. It's just, and they hold up the little puppy.
Aww.
And just a dollar a day or a dollar a week or something. And this puppy can have a thriving home. And then there's another commercial of children. I don't know what country they're from or what, but apparently every child in this country has some type of a physical deformity, a mouth that never continued to grow toward the cheek, some type of horrible deformity, or their bones are sticking through their skin. I mean, these horrific, horrific, and they're not just human beings, they're little children, man. And you go like, what are you doing to me? And just, Ron, just a dollar a day and you can save this child. You don't know who this child is. Stop doing this. I know it's a horrible thing. It's just, TV has become such a downer, man. Such a downer. Watching a nice show, having a good time, and all of a sudden there's just some attorney from Rhode Island. I think that entire state is made up all of slip and fall attorneys. Were you in an auto accident? We'll fight for you in court. It was like, whoa, wow. Are people out to get me or what? And you're horrible, and you're a horrible auto accident. You can't walk anymore. You deserve millions of dollars. Oh, stop it. I was enjoying a television show. Don't do this to me. Or you're watching a show, and all of a sudden it goes to commercial, and they're talking about some type of drug that can save your life. You'll no longer have this horrible disease. And then for the next 5 minutes, they're listing all the possible side effects that can cause death. It's like, wow, stop it. Stop curing me and then telling me that the very thing that's going to cure me can possibly make me die as well. Or give me some other condition that I'll need some other pill to take care of, and that other pill has side effects. It's very sad. Everything is negative. And then there's a little positive at the end with a little kavat that, well, we can solve your problem, but it could cause death. Well, I guess I take my chances then, don't I? I was talking about this in the beginning of the show. There's a television commercial about your gums receding. Everybody's gums recede. If you don't brush with a certain toothpaste, your teeth are going to fall out of your mouth, and your gums are going to recede back, all the way back to the point where there'll be no teeth in your mouth, and there's nothing to hold them in. So what are you scaring me like this for? I've been through an entire life, and I've brushed and I've flossed, and why are you scaring me like this? And then I realized, that's the magic of Donald Trump. Ron, what are you talking about? That's the magic of Don. Don scares you into voting for him. If you don't vote for me, the skies will fall down. If you don't vote for me, the world will stop spinning. Don, it's the opposite. If I vote for you with your environmental background, the world will stop spinning. It's the opposite, Don. And let me tell you something else, Don, about your little declaration of emergency so you can build your little wall so you can satisfy your customer base there. Let me tell you something else, Don. You're not going to be president forever, and that's a godsend. And the day you're not, everything that you've done is going to be reversed and quickly, all by emergency declaration, because at that point it will be an emergency. And I hope the first person that comes into office declares a state of emergency in order to get funding to save the planet. How about that idea? How about none of this stuff makes any difference unless you make the planet livable? Donald has just appointed the Environmental Protection Agency, the head of that person. Donald has just appointed the head of the agency now. Was in charge of oil and coal and stuff. It's like, well, okay, this is not going to work out for anybody. This is not going to work out. Declaration of emergency? Yeah, we'll all be using it now, Don. Thanks for opening up Pandora's box, because we're going to use that box to correct all the crap that you did. And Republicans, let me tell you something. You should be mad as hell at Donald Trump. Why? Did you think that Donald Trump is the only Republican on the planet that can do things? Well, he's the only one that can't. You know what Donald has done? He's destroyed your entire party. Everything that you stood for as Republican, Donald has destroyed. And you're still buying it. You're still buying it. Don't you understand? If you got rid of Donald, Pence would be president and everything would be better, because it couldn't be worse. Oh, Republicans, Republicans, Republicans. You're so scared of the Democrats. You're so, it's anything. I'll take Donald. I'll take the devil over a Democrat. Oh, okay. All right. That's, it's not going to work in your favor, to be honest with you here. It's not going to work in your favor. Here, we're so scared of socialism and big government. All right, I think there's other things you should be more scared of, and they're right in front of your face, but okay, like the destruction of your party. How about that? Okay, kids, time for me to move on, and thank you so much for listening to my political opinions here. I don't know what yours are, but I do this in a friendly, loving manner. My guest today is going to talk about wit, and we do need wit at this time and place in our history. We really do. So let's speak to our guest. James, how are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
Great. James Geary joins us now. He's written a book called Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need Wit. I know why we need it now, that's for sure.
Why is that?
Well, I can't go into that. I think it's obvious. But anyway, how did you get into writing this book?
You know, I've always been fascinated by language and wordplay, and I grew up in a family that was very verbally witty, and my parents and my aunts and uncles were always bantering back and forth at the parties they threw, and my cousins and I kind of hid under the couch behind the sofa and secretly tape recorded the proceedings back then using tape recorders.
Yeah.
So I think I've just been fascinated by language and wit and jokes and witticism since I was a little kid. And over the years, I just became more and more curious about how wit actually works and what it is. And one of the things that I discovered was that wit is not necessarily always being funny. Wit makes you laugh, but wit also makes you think.
It does. And I was going to say, what's the difference between wit and humor? And I think that's pretty much the answer. It does make you think. It can go deeper than making you smile or laugh.
Yeah, I think wit, actually, if you look at the etymology of the word, where the word wit comes from, it comes from a Sanskrit verb that means to see or to know. And so wit is the same word as witness, which is to see something and to know something by seeing it. And it's also the same word as wisdom.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, more than just making jokes, I think wit is about making connections. And connections that are surprising or reveal something unexpected and give you some kind of insight or knowledge or wisdom as a result, you know. And it can make you laugh in the process, but the the end result is wisdom rather than just a belly laugh.
Although some comedy writers would might even take offense to the term if you use it incorrectly, such as that person is very funny or that person's very witty. Witty seems like a step down from funny.
Oh, really? Okay. I would argue it's a step up from funny. But
oh, okay. All right.
Like for me, the difference between funny and witty is, like, you know, there's that old slapstick joke, a guy's walking down the street, he sees he doesn't see a banana peel on the sidewalk, steps on the banana peel and falls over.
Uh-huh.
We all laugh. That's a great pratfall.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But witty would be a guy walking down the street, he sees the banana peel, steps over it, and as he continues walking, he turns around to admire his accomplishment, and he falls through an open manhole cover.
See. Okay.
That, for me, has the twist that makes it witty.
Okay. To me, that's extremely funny, but okay.
Maybe extremely funny and witty are the same thing.
I know that we like to be around that kind of personality. That much I do know. A witty person tends to be a magnet in the sense of you feel good. It always feels good to be in that frame as opposed to not.
Yeah, and I think that's because, you know, when you're being witty or when someone is being witty, it's actually a collaborative experience.
Right.
Like if you make a joke or a pun, the person gets it, right?
Yeah.
That's what we say, you get a joke, which kind of implies that the listener really is doing some creative work as well.
Yes.
And to get a joke, you have to make the same connections that the person who's making the joke has already made. And I think that creates a kind of, weirdly, a kind of intimacy and a bond between the person who's being witty and the person who is receiving or interpreting or getting the wit. So it's a kind of social experience that is creates a kind of warm sense of intimacy.
Yeah. This is not your first rodeo. I always love that phrase. I don't know what it means, but
it's a nice metaphor.
Yeah, it is. I've always wanted to go to rodeo for a second time and stand up and say, this isn't my first rodeo, and no one knows.
That would be extremely witty. You should do that.
That would be witty. You're right, because it's clever. There you go.
That's right.
Yeah. Your other books are a little introspective as well.
Yeah, and I think that's part of my lifelong fascination with language and words. I've written books about metaphor and how metaphor works in our daily lives. So I think we tend to think of metaphor as something you read in poetry or something like that. And of course, yeah, you do. But we use metaphors every day. You just used one, in fact. Mm-hmm. This is not my first rodeo. Right. Is a metaphor, and that's the way we communicate with each other. True. In a kind of rich imagery and evocative phrases about things that are more abstract, or our feelings or ideas and things like
that's
that.
That's true.
And I've written about aphorisms, short, witty, philosophical sayings, I never let school interfere with my education, Mark Twain. and that goes back to the point that saying's got wisdom in it.
Yeah, it does.
It's witty and it's funny, but it's also wise.
Yeah. People like that who use that properly are almost like soothsayers. It's almost like Confucius, in the sense of what comes out of their mouth is entertaining and yet, wow, profound.
Yeah, and you mentioned Confucius. He was actually a great aphorist. Really? If you look at the history's great philosophers or the great religious figures, spiritual figures, including Jesus and Muhammad and the Buddha, they all spoke in aphorisms or short little teaching stories.
Yes.
And that's because they're easy to remember, they're short, and they have that twist that makes them very memorable, like Mark Twain's saying.
Yeah.
And that's, wit is also very, brevity is the soul of wit, as Shakespeare said. And it's got soul to it as well. And because it's so short and it has that twist, it makes it easy to remember. So when you read something or hear something like Mark Twain saying, you tend to remember it because it makes you laugh and it makes you think.
It does. Witty also kind of hits us from behind the head, where it's not an obvious joke, as you say, but it just kind of all of a sudden appears there, and now you're in its cloud. It's kind of interesting in that sense. I never really liked straight jokes with punchlines, because it's too much of a setup. There's nothing really, there's no depth to it. But you're right, witty just kind of comes around from the back and taps you on the shoulder. It's nice.
Yeah, it's like a surprise.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you hear, like when you hear a really witty comment or a great pun, first of all, like one thing, they're spontaneous, right? They're improvised
in
the moment.
Right.
Wit, you can't rehearse wit. It happens in the moment. So I think that's part of that sneaking up behind you kind of thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it also gives you a kind of different perspective on things, and you look at something in a way, or you make a connection in a way that you never did before. You never saw two things like juxtaposed in that way, like you would in a good pun. And that, when you hear a great joke or a witty remark, it's uplifting in a way.
Yeah.
You're in a better mood because of it, and I think that's part of what you're getting at. It's that novelty and surprise that really makes it special.
Yeah, it kind of creates an atmosphere. So when you wrote this book, what kind of comments did you get? Did people feel like they understood wit now, or that they appreciated it more?
Well, I wrote the book. I tried to write the book about wit, and I failed dismally, because trying to write the book in a kind of straight way, I was destroying the jokes, and I was trying to over-explaining, and so that's how I arrived at the idea I would try to make the book be witty, not just be about wit.
Yes.
And so I wrote each chapter in a different style. There's a chapter written like a barroom monologue, a guy telling jokes in a bar. There's a chapter written as a sermon, you would hear in church on Sunday. There's a chapter written as a scientific paper. There's a chapter written as rap lyrics to a rap song.
Whoa.
And So the response that I've gotten so far mostly has been that people really enjoy it, and they enjoy kind of diving into the different styles. Mm-hmm. And each style tries to kind of embody what that kind of wit is about. So yeah. There's, you know, in the book, the point of the book is that wit is about more than being just funny. Yeah. And so you can be scientifically witty, you can be, scientists can be witty in discoveries or yeah. innovation. Ministers or preachers can be witty in their sermons. Uh-huh. Rap lyrics are really witty. So I tried to match the kind of wit I was writing about with uh-huh. the style in which I was writing about it, and that seems to, at least for the most part, have worked.
Interesting. Very interesting. The book's available everywhere?
Yeah, you can get it online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound if you want to order it through your local bookstore.
Okay.
It's a great website.
One more question for you, which popped up when I started reading the book. It's called Wit's End. What does actually that phrase mean? I hear it all the time, but I can't quite figure out what it's supposed to mean.
Well, it means when you reach your wit's end, that yes. means... you know, you don't know what else you can do. You're kind of okay. frustrated yeah. and helpless and out of options.
Okay.
But living by your wits is the antidote to that. You know, that's when uh-huh. you're, you know, being resourceful and inventive and you know, solving problems using limited resources. But the way that I use it, it's a pun.
Well, I know that.
As you might expect, well, from a book about wit.
I mean, yes.
Wit's end being... the end of wit, not in the sense of
yes.
wit is coming to an end right. and it will no longer exist, but the end of wit in the sense of its purpose.
Gotcha.
So wit's end, in the punning way that I'm using it,
yes.
means the point of wit, wit's purpose.
Right.
And that relates to, you know, the subtitle of the book, Why We Need It.
Right.
And I think why we need it is because there's lots of, we need to keep our wits about us, given what's going on in the world
Thank
today.
Thank you very much. My opening comment, yeah. yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, perfect title for the book, no question about it. I just never understood what that phrase meant. Now I do. Well, there you go. Thank you very much. James Geary, we'll look forward to the next one. Fascinating book available everywhere. Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. Thank you so much for your time today. Oh, is there a website that we can visit just to follow what you do?
Yeah, jamesgeary.com. You can find out all about the Wit book and the other books.
Okay, and I'll spell your last name for those that may not realize, Geary. James, again, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, there you go. You've been really, really good through this whole process. You haven't squirmed all that much, and you kind of stayed where you were. You're really good. I don't think I tell you how much I appreciate you. So let's just leave it like that. Better idea. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back again the next weekday that rolls around. Until then, I wish you peace. Whew, that was a rough one.